So we are called to order for today's participatory governance council. Thank you for being here. And if we could have a volunteer to make our hand acknowledgement. All right, thank you, Student Vice Chancellor.
Land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land, and in accordance with their tradition, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibility as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territories. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush community, and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you so much. Now we will go on to roll call. And we do have a couple of folks that to let us know short notice that they wouldn't be here. So we'll have a little clunkiness.
Oh, all right, upside down.
There we go.
Having some sharing. That's my Zoom is reconnecting.
Oh, okay. Yes, we are ready for the roll call.
Heather Brandt.
Aye.
Amelia Kong.
Present.
Jay Langdon.
Oh, sorry. I'm like already voting. We didn't get to them.
That's all who it is.
And Heather.
You're a pirate, though. No.
Present.
That's all. David Delgado.
Not the first.
J.R. Hall.
Present.
Maria Salazar Colon. Michael Snyder.
Here.
Very brave woman.
I believe that Mary is online.
She's online.
Here.
All right. And Mary, are you someplace where you do not have someone 18 years old or older present with you?
That is correct. I'm at my daughter's home without
okay.
Little guys.
Thank you.
Katya Fuchs, not present today. Vivian Marrow-Wittuck.
Present.
Bill Graves. Joyce Coffey, also
okay.
Cynthia Dewar.
Present.
Noah Lystrup. And Lisa Cooper Wilkins.
Present. Thank you.
Have a quorum with
oh,
nine.
And you have Jay.
Is oh, again? Thank you for letting me know. Good, Jay Langdon. Noted. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. So we are now going to proceed with the review and approval of the agenda. I know you all received this in advance. The one change that I will note at this point is that we will not have the presentation of the Enrollment Management Committee update that will be deferred to the next meeting.
So moved.
Seconded.
So it's been moved by Councilmember Villalobos and seconded by Councilmember Brandt to adopt the agenda as presented. Is there any further discussion? With the noted correction, sorry, presented with the noted correction. Is there any other discussion? All right, hearing none, we are going to do a roll call vote on approval.
Aye. You gotta write this down.
Billy Falk?
Yes.
Jay Landon?
Aye.
Aye.
David Delgado? J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Salazar Colon, Michael Snyder,
yes.
Mary Bravewoman,
aye.
Patrick Books, not present. Vivian Marrow-Wittuck,
aye.
Bill Reyes, Joyce Coffey, not present. Cynthia Dewar,
aye.
Noah Lystrup,
aye.
And Lisa Kupel-Wilkins.
Aye. All right, thank you. And now we're going to move on to the approval of the minutes from our October 2nd.
I'd like to move to approve the minutes for October 2nd for Participatory Governance Council.
All right, so it's been moved by Councilmember Brandt and seconded by Councilmember Kong that we the minutes as presented, but is there any further discussion? All right, hearing none, we will go on to roll call vote for the approval of the minutes as presented.
Heather Brandt?
Aye.
Amelia Kong?
Yes.
Jay Langdon?
Aye.
Polinelli Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado? J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salter? Michael Snyder?
Yes.
Yes. Mary Bravewoman?
Yes.
Patrick looks not present. Lillian Magruba-Duck?
Yes.
Bill Reyes? Joyce Poppy not present. Cynthia Dubois?
Yes.
Noah Leisler?
Aye.
And Lisa
Aye.
All
right. All right, we are at the point in the agenda where public comment on items not on the agenda can be entertained. Do we have any members of the public present who would like to make public comment at this time? Yes.
I went to the Speak to Me poetry reading event yesterday. It was a very awesome event. I even got to perform a poem on my own. I got to help set up with that event too. So that was really fun.
All right. Thank you for sharing that. Any other public comments? I'm also looking. Oh, I see a hand raised online. If we can have Mary Bravewoman. Mary, we see your hand. Would you like to speak?
Oh, thank you. Needed to get myself unmuted here. Yes, thanks. I wanted to just, and I'm sure everyone saw the email that went out last Wednesday about. Rat poison being used to help mitigate the rodent issue in Batmull Hall. And I want everyone to be absolutely clear that the information in the email was not completely accurate. Poison is being used inside of Batmull Hall. And the reason I know this is because my dog, Carl Dean, got a hold of a packet that was placed in my office unbeknownst to me. I went back and I found four more packets. My department chair also in cleaning up his office found packets of poison. So regardless of what Orkin is telling us, there is rat poison in the building and it is in places that are accessible. So if you have students or you know others with service animals or people who bring their children into the building, it needs to be addressed. This was a terrifying incident that I went through last week. And luckily, my little guy's okay. But I'm incensed that it was placed in my office without any knowledge. And what we have heard repeatedly from facilities is that they're not using any poison in the building and that they're not using glue traps when that is not the case at all. Because I have poison, snap traps, and glue traps within my office alone. So anyway, just needed to say that out loud. Thank you.
I'm glad that Carl Dean is okay. Thank you for sharing that. Yes, go ahead, Councilmember.
So Frey. I also want to follow up with that as well. I still haven't really heard back the final information regarding this. So poison packs outside are also dangerous, not only to our neighbors and their animals and pets, as well as their children, but inside these classrooms, we were told they weren't, which is obviously untrue. This is not the first time we've had Orkin with an issue. They were trapping raccoon babies at one point at the Loretta Police Station. And we had to, I actually had to initiate the chancellor's office to get that stopped because that was actually illegal. And the neighbors were also complaining about that. These things are not, they don't look good to our neighbors if we're continuing to disregard health and human services as well as the wildlife services. You know, you can't trap animals and move them. So according to them, they were trapping them to kill them, which was not okay either. So I just want to point out that I don't trust Oregon, and I think we need, and the chancellor's here, I'd like to make sure that she's aware that we continue to ask for this, and we get just blurbs back saying they're not. But I'd like to get a final report of what is actually happening with that contract and what our end goal is here. What are we going to do? Because we can't have people going into offices. If we are even if they were okay to use poison bags in the offices, coming into your office finding dead rats is not okay. And it's not our custodians' jobs to pick those up. It's certainly not our faculty or staff's jobs to pick those up. So something has to be taken care of here. We need to get a final report from our advisor, not just these little blow-ups, it's the bleeps or whatever, that say, oh yeah, they're not using or whatever, because they're actually misleading, they're not even accurate.
Thank you for that. Any other public comments? Yes.
Yes. Two public comment to stay on the topic of Orkin. I do remember quite a few times in the previous last year, and I think maybe the year before as well, suggesting that we look at alternative companies outside of Orkin for various issues and concerns that we've had. And I don't know if maybe we could comment, and maybe we could do follow-up with facilities or whoever is in charge of these contracts and how they go about contracts with the companies that we have raised concerns over the years.
And one more opportunity for the folks online, if there's any members of public online that have public. And did we receive any public comments in our PGC email prior to the meeting?
No.
All right, we did not receive public comments in the PGC email account. All right, so we are going to move forward then and appreciate that our Chancellor Messina is here with us and will give us some support. Thank you.
And just to follow up on the conversation about fat ball hole and the rat poison, I was in contact with some of these last week, and while you were speaking, I was texting Alberto again. So I have requested the information that Michael has shared. And I think not only would I hope he gets back to us soon, but I also think that perhaps asking him to come and share here and have a conversation here would be very helpful.
Yeah.
So I'll add that to that. I have had a whirlwind busy week after being on vacation. It's been great to do kind of catch up and visit different departments and learn more things. And that has been really positive. I'm super excited next Thursday, San Francisco State, SF Unified, and City College of San Francisco, the three, and we might as well shout it out, Joy, women leaders, along with the mayor, are going to be announcing a conference and room great partnership entities that will make it easier for students to move from K-12 to here, as well as from here to San Francisco State. I think it's a really exciting opportunity and a chance to have a lot of collaboration. And so that is super exciting. And that'll be before in the morning before the board meeting in the afternoon. The other thing is that I've been spending a lot of time with different constituent groups talking and learning more about things. And one of the things that has come up from students, it's come up from faculty, it's come up from administrators, is an ongoing concern about communication. And so I've asked in every meeting that I've been in, so I'll just ask again here, if there's different levels of communication, and it seems like we are sort of struggling with almost every level of that. So there's, you know, timely information, relevant information, making sure we don't give everybody too much information, but ensuring that it's an information that people want and need. Everything from as simple as timeliness of email responses to things like this, where there's something very important and people should know about it, and that didn't come out until after the fact. So we are working as a team, but I would be overjoyed to receive any suggestions that any of you have about things that you've seen work, whether it's modality or in any of those areas, whether it's consistent, just regular information, if it's specific, time-centered information. But it is something that I think all of us are experiencing, and so we want to include that forward. Offer that up. I am headed to New Orleans for a national conference. I'm on the board of the Higher Education Research Development Institute. And it's an exciting opportunity for industry to get together with community college leaders. And our role as community college leaders is sort of to, they use us as like a testing ground to see if they understand what we need in terms of multiple different types of products and services that would help community colleges. And it's resulted in some pretty exciting development. So I'm looking forward to seeing if there's some new things that might. So we help them, and then ultimately sometimes it helps us too. So I'll share back on that when I get back. And then as always, if there's any questions or anyone wants to share something with me, I would be happy to answer or listen.
Thanks, Messina. Are there any council members that have questions or comments about the chancellor's report? Are there any members of the public who have comments or questions? Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate you joining us.
Chancellor, can you wait? Because I have an announcement.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. So we are going to then move forward with the next item on the agenda, which is an opportunity to share awards, recognitions, kudos, and gratitude. So I will open the floor. Let's start with Councilmember Smith.
Thank you. So I wanted to thank Chancellor Messina. She had already said that she would, Chancellor's office would help host the annual Christmas breakfast, which is not going to be breakfast, and which is also where we actually have the Family Resource Toy Drive. So this year, mark your calendars. We'll be sending information soon, but it'll be November 11th.
December.
Thursday, which is so much better.
December.
I'm sorry. Yeah. December 11th. December 11th, which is so much better than a Friday, Thursday from 4 to 7. And we are including City at 90 Committee, as well as the Family Resource Center, the Crestfed Senate, and the Chancellor's Office. And we've asked the foundation to also commit. So more details just to go out. So thank you again for that, because that will definitely help anchor the toy drive this year.
Now, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be great.
Thank you.
Now I want to hear all the gratitude first, then I'll go.
I just have a quick question. Would it be possible, or is it possible, to frame it as holiday? We'd like to expand the number of...
I see.
You said Christmas.
I'm sorry. I sometimes do that. It's actually holidays.
Okay. All right.
It's not just Christmas.
All right. Awesome. All right. Councilmember Villalobos.
Yes. Two. Two of them. I'll wait for the last one till after everybody goes. So I would like to show just recognition and gratitude to the students that are halfway done with the semester. Congratulations. You're doing it, whether you're taking midterms, presentations, or just in class learning. We're almost there. Much gratitude, and thank you for your resilience and navigating City College and just academics and life as a holistic student. So I just wanted to share that with you all students. Then I'll wait for the second one after everybody else goes.
Okay. Yes. Member Leister.
Give a shout out to and kudos to City Dream. I had a chance to talk to Leti Silva, the counselor, today. They're have a lot going on this month for Undocumented Student Month of Action. They just got back from Sacramento. They took a delegation out there for a conference, and Leti showed me the picture, and City College had one of the largest delegations out of everybody that showed up. It was City Dream and then Next Step. So they have a lot of stuff going on this month to honor and to raise awareness and advocate for our undocumented students.
Thank you. Yes,
I wanted to thank the financial aid department, Sparkpoint, the Guardian Scholars and Hearts, EOPS, CARE, and Next Up for joining us this year. For the they did as well last year, but for the student health flu clinics, which we have already rolled out. Our first official center one will be on Monday from 10 to 12:30 at Mission Campus. Tuesday is Evans from 3 to 4. On Wednesday, we have downtown in the morning and Chinatown in the afternoon. And then on November 4th, we'll have Chinatown. So they're all coming with us as they did last year. So it's a great separate.
Yes. Thank you. Last week and into this week, it's National Banned Books Week.
Ah.
So our fabulous librarians have joined the Freedom to Read campaign for the American Library Association. So head on over to Rosenberg, and when you walk in, you'll see the display that they put forth. It's really important in this time to make certain that we don't ban anything.
I also want to open it up to the folks online. If you have any awards, recognitions, kudos, or gratitudes you would like to share, and members of the public are welcome to join in.
What else? Kudos, gratitudes, awards.
All right. Councilmember Villalobos.
Yes. Lastly, or last but not last, I just also want to see in their words, recognition, kudos, and gratitude, all of them. Want to wish a happy birthday to Heather Brand. Happy birthday to you. Happy 21st birthday.
21st.
That's been a fun.
Thank you.
We're going to be doing it more.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Really appreciate it. It's always good to get some uplifting news. We're going to now move on to item 7. Old business under 7A. I actually don't have any additional updates under discussion of protocols, procedures, meeting modality at this point. I'll just do a check to see if there are any folks who have questions or comments or requests for information under that item. Any members of the public have questions, comments under this item? If not, we are going to go ahead and move on to revise APMBP 5.27. And Andrew King is here for a second read, and I believe to request an endorsement based on some discussion that was had also. I mean, last meeting.
Thank you for inviting me again for a second reading. I took a lot of the feedback and incorporated them into a revision of the suggested language there.
What?
Second page.
Second slide or the second?
First slide, second page, excuse me. First slide, second page. So what I did was made it into two parts and what's more explicit about the level of access for this group of students who are physically prohibited from accessing the student center. And then I added two words to the original piece, and exclusively.
Making it crystal clear. The population.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Anything else you needed to point out is in response to questions or concerns from us? Did we get a chance to see the resolution?
We did.
Okay.
Can I just ask a procedural question?
Yes.
What happens when changes are made to a resolution, but it's already gone to constituency groups?
I think making sure that it goes back to those groups for point of information, that questions came up subsequently and here's how they were addressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Particularly since they may not have been questions at that first group, so that wasn't necessarily their concern.
I just wasn't sure because I don't feel like this is a major change.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
It, I mean, I know it's more like clarification than anything. So
I'm happy to come back to the students too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. And also thank you for reaching out. And I'm sorry that I wasn't able to assist you as you make the changes that you made.
Yes.
I would just like to move to approve this resolution for the student health fee exemption.
Okay.
Seconded.
So it's been moved and seconded, moved by Councilmember Villalobos and seconded by Councilmember Brandt. Essentially, I guess we're endorsing the request that you've made for the changes to student health fee and its resolution. Any additional questions or comments?
Yes. I'm just wondering if this addresses concerns that members of the council had, but they feel like this is clear and transparent enough.
Yeah, I mean the first part, prohibited part, I don't believe. Yeah, second part was fine.
That's fine. I wanted to be explicit though.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
The first
one. So you just went above and beyond itself.
Yeah.
Yes. Any other discussion? Comments or questions? Any members of the public with comments or questions regarding the changes? All right, hearing none, we'll go ahead and take a roll call vote. We're voting to endorse the proposed changes to the student health fee and support fee resolution, the accompanying resolution.
Heather Brent?
Aye.
Amelia Kwan? Jay Langdon?
Aye.
Alinali Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado? J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salazar Colon, Michael Snyder.
Yes.
Mary Brave Woman.
Yes.
Matthew Brooks, not present. Lillian Marugodak.
Yes.
Paul Reyes. Ms. Conti, not present. Cynthia Dewar.
Yes.
Nora Meister.
Yes.
And Lisa Cooper Wilkinson.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for passing this resolution.
Thank you.
I also want to wish she's not here, Yvette, a happy birthday on the 18th.
Oh, so.
Yvette?
Yes, okay. Yvette. So I have to remind her and Schubert. No, she couldn't be here, but yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Give it up in a second.
Listen, just shout out to the Libras, period.
Even the October.
Damn it.
Do you shout out?
That's hilarious. He said, even the October. Tell us how you really feel.
Fantastic. All right. All right. So the next item under old business is Chapter 1 for policy revision, second read, and endorsement. ABC Charles, we are glad you are here with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So yes, bringing this back for a second read. It still has the original revisions that I received from the Administrators Association. I've added to this the recommendations that you all made here at PGC. And then I've also added some suggestions, recommendations from associated students. So those are captured as comments. And my request would be for you to accept this with the comments to be implemented. Some of what's in the comments would be implemented in the administrative procedures for those items. And I will bring those through separately. In the interest of time, I want to move the board policies forward, but we can come back and do the administrative procedures later. There's not that many, but those where there are any changes. So seeing the the changes. I know that the changes that I received or discussed with Associate Students Executive Council are on pages 63 and 64. So they're way at the end, close to the end. Yeah, so this, and here too, excuse me, so the first one from Associated Students is here. So changing this to, right, the chancellor or their designee will support the student trustee in selecting a mentor. So it's actually not adding it up, it's editing it to read that.
We're looking at the comments.
Yeah.
So this would change.
Actually, we were going to add it. No, I think I had that right. Yeah, we are going to add it. So we can keep the language, but add that sentence to be clear. But I know we'll pop in. And then the other change is from Associate Students Executive Counselor is way at the end. But if you keep going through, you'll see.
Right there.
This one here. Yeah, so this is simply changing the student activities, the student life and leadership manager to the manager responsible for student life and leadership. And I think there was a second place, down below where that would change as well. And then you see that there was a reference there to the AP under that second comment where we need to change the language there. And then the Associate Students recommended removing the reference to the handbook because that document changes. So I'm just going to remove it because there is a reference to going through the CCLC training, as I recall, and that would cover that. So in asking you to recommend that we move these board policies forward to the chancellor, it would be inclusive of what's in the comments all the way through the document.
Any other questions for ABC Charles about the proposed changes to chapter review board policy revisions? Any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion? So it's been moved by Councilmember Dewar and seconded by Councilmember Snyder that we move forward with the proposed revisions to board chapter one of board policy revisions. Is there any further discussion?
Actually, can I ask a question? Sorry.
Okay.
I'm not sure what chapter this would be in, but I was curious about board policy. Is it related to the anti-racism policy that's being developed? Mm-hmm. What chapter would that be in?
That would, I forget.
It's not chapter one.
No, it's not chapter one.
Okay.
No.
Yes. Right. But yeah, just curious about that. At some
yeah.
Point.
Yeah.
And it's moving through.
Yeah. So we should see it at some point.
My understanding was that it's at a standstill. Because there's some things,
happening. So, I think there's a lot of questions have come up just about, you know, should it be a standalone? Do we have any existing policies that could be amended? And then what in particular, there's been some questions about how would we actually enforce this? And also,
thank you for that. Future agenda item, please. No, me too. Like, tell me more.
Thank you. Any other questions specifically about the chapter board policy?
No. Now that I know they're not in.
All right. So we will go ahead with a roll call vote in support of endorsing
particular motion. Is that right?
Hi.
Billy Cox?
Yes.
Yeah. J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Various Salazar Colon? No. Michael Snyder?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Michael Snyder?
Yeah.
Obviously. Mary Bravewoman?
Yes.
Katya Fuchs, not present. Vivian LaRosa?
Yes.
Joel Reyes, not present. Doris Coffey, not present. Cynthia Dewar?
Yes.
Noah Lystrom?
Yes.
And Lisa Distance.
Yes.
The motion passes.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for being here, ABC Travels. We appreciate it. And I think the next
one, too.
Yes.
Let's see. Yeah, you are. So we're on to new business and a proposal to maintain VP 6.27 academic renewal as is with no changes. And this is an action item because it had come before us previously. Do you want to give an overview?
Yeah, the AP came before you previously with changes, but the Academic Senate had included a review of Board Policy 6.27 prior to it coming to PGC when they were looking at the AP. They did not recommend any changes to the BP, but just to make sure, and because the BP is essentially due for review anyway, making sure that those are closer together in time frame, we wanted to bring the BP forward with no changes. And because there's no changes, hoping that you would be willing to take action on this today, and then we can move that forward to the board with no changes, and then the associated AP to the board as an information item. Does that make sense? So if the board will accept the policy and receive the AP.
Go ahead.
I was just going to reinforce that the Academic Senate does prefer to see them come through at the same time so that we're not questioning how they connect,
right,
or even having to do any of that labor of trying to connect them and just having them smoothly.
I just want to appreciate that it actually looks like a board policy and not like a board policy disguised as an administrative procedure.
Not disguised as,
because sometimes the language, the specificity in the policy is too much.
Yeah. And we provided the AP here just for information purposes, so you know you can see again to remind you what those changes were.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for ABC Charles about this? Comments?
Sorry, I think I may have lost track of the discussion. So the BP is staying the same and the AP is what?
The AP was already changed.
Okay.
PGC already recommended it.
Okay.
It didn't
bring the BP along with it.
Exactly.
Got it. Yes. Yeah. Got it. Thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome. Any members of the public present who have questions, whether in person or online?
Here, actually, I have another question.
Yes, you may.
I'm just curious about how our academic renewal process compares to that of other California colleges, because I know that they vary from institution to institution.
Okay.
Without being the official person that did this, the work that was done by the Educational Policies Committee in court, right, with our articulation officer aligned it with new changes to Title V or Ed Code.
Okay.
Right. So the changes being added were aligning it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would imply that other community colleges are doing the same thing.
Similar
things, yes.
Yeah, I remember attending a conference. I can't remember which one it was, whether it was hosted by the Academic Senate for California Community Colleges that talked about the different variations of academic renewal policies and how some institutions have more leniency than others. And I found that really interesting because I was like, why? Like, you know, and so I was just curious where we as an institution fell on that spectrum of how supportive and lenient we are with regard to students, whether it has to do with number of units or GPAs or I just didn't have that information.
I certainly request a presentation at a later point. So, yes.
Not quite on this particular topic, but in the future, can we make sure that APs and BPs go together so that we don't run into this issue as our sort of our.
With the exception of Chapter 1, where you're going to see the APs coming through later, but that's
because in general,
yeah,
this one.
Exactly.
Yeah. That might be just sort of should be our standard.
Yeah, it should be.
Right. If there are no other questions, is there a motion to support approving the changes or non-change of MP to move forward?
So moved.
Second.
Set, Councilmember Bravewoman?
Yes.
Okay, so it's moved by Councilmember Villalobos and seconded by Councilmember Bravewoman to approve moving the AP forward with no changes.
BP.
BP. BP. Sorry, BP 6.27 forward with no changes. And if there is no further discussion, we can take a roll call vote.
Heather Brent?
Aye.
Amelia Kong?
Yes.
Jay Langdon?
Aye.
Alina Ali Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado, not present. J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salazar Colon, not present. Michael Snyder?
Yes.
Mary Bravewoman?
Yes.
Katja Fuchs, not present. Vivian Marula Duck?
Yes.
Joe Reyes, not present. Joyce Carfee, not present. Cynthia Dewar?
Yes.
Yes.
And these are the Republicans.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. All right. So the next item on the agenda is about our new, I guess, re-implementation of the college's drop for non-payment. So my understanding is, because this just predates me, when the college stopped dropping students for non-payment, my understanding was it's about 12 or 13 years ago that this was a thing. And we probably are carrying somewhere between $6 and $10 million of uncollected tuition fees because there hasn't been a an action to drop students from the classes, thus suspending the fact that they would have payments due. So that is going to go back into effect, effective with spring registration, which is scheduled to start on November 17th of this semester for priority registration. And December 1st opens up general registration. And at that point, any student who registers for classes will be required to pay for the tuition, ideally fees, for those classes. And there are different points in the semester by which this needs to happen. So I will pull up the calendar so people can see it. But initially, it's like approximately 7 days that the student would have to make payment for the classes before being dropped. Later in the semester, it reduces to 3 days. And then right before classes start, it's 24 hours. So what will be happening is, and I got a couple of caveats to share about this. So one thing that has been done is lots of collaboration with the IT department, the fiscal areas, our admissions and records and enrollment areas, and a number of special programs throughout student affairs to work on this. We wanted to be certain to think about especially vulnerable student populations and have identified 14 different student populations will not be dropped for non-payment, whether they're in the ELPS CARE program, they're veterans or CalWORKs. And so for the past few months, lots of testing has been done to make sure that those students with residual activities in the system will not be dropped. I think it goes without saying participants in Free City, active participants in Free City won't be dropped. We also are working on a communication strategy, and those messages will start to be released very soon here, just to alert people this is a big change that's happening. There is a big push for students to take advantage of the payment plan system that is in place, reminding students that earlier in the registration process that they can get on a payment plan, the more payments that they can stretch out. Sometimes you get to a point in this the registration cycle when you've do have the opportunity to sign up for the payment plan, you get fewer and fewer payments the further along in the registration cycle that happens. So there also is a schedule for that. And the last thing that I will say, and I will definitely open it up for questions, is the system apparently is not able to distinguish between, say, for instance, if a student signed up for two classes, six units, paid for those classes, decided, I'll just say at the last minute, they wanted to add a third, and they didn't pay for that third class within the 7 days, I'll just use the 7 days, they would get dropped from all their classes. There is no way for that system to know, I paid for these two, but I didn't pay for the third. They have an outstanding balance. It's just about the amount of classes. So again, we're really pushing for students to sign up for the payment plan so that this doesn't happen. We're also encouraging students to explore financial aid. There are some students who haven't yet explored filling out a FAFSA or the CCPG, and they may find that they're eligible. Some students are not. That's why they didn't sign up for it. They've already done that legwork. But this is really trying to encourage students who haven't done that to at least look for another option, particularly because the CCPG can help cover these, right? Because they're, we recognize that there are multiple kinds of fees. One of the things that the system was able to do, we could set a threshold. And so that $39, that is the combination of the health fee, the student activities fee, and the representation fee, students will not be dropped for that fee. You were able to pay everything, or Free City was able to cover everything, but that fee, you won't be dropped from your classes for that $39. Now, you could be in a class that had materials fees, in our art class or some kind of CTE class, and you got 90 some dollars in fees generated for that, it's not going to not drop you. I mean, it will drop you for those. It's the $39 that is the standard fee that most students, and I would say we asked our tuition and fees area, and they said, you know, most students will carry that $39 sometimes beyond a certain, you know, that 7 days or whatever. Because Free City doesn't cover, and it takes a minute to communicate, like, hey, this fee is still standing. So that $39 fee will not drop you, but if you have other fees associated with your attendance that haven't been paid, that could potentially drop you from your classes. So
I have a question. So how many students are we looking at? Hey, this is different. With all the 14 groups, and then
also it's hard to know because of those 14 groups, because we haven't done this before with that exclusion. But I will say, when we asked about the fee, that they were able to tell us that there were approximately 5,000 students who might have that $39 hanging out there, but that there may have been 4,000 more who had more fees out there. How many of those 4,000 are part of those 14 groups? I have no idea, because none of those, you know, if they were part of those 14 groups, they're not going to drop. So this is like new for all of us. And we know that we're going to be looking at it and having to go back and tinker with things and reconsider things. But this is at least where we are going into this registration cycle. I did see Council Kong, and then so Council Member Kong.
So the 14 groups, would you be able to tell us?
Let me see if I can get a list of that, but it is mostly the special programs, like the,
I'm asking because, like, for example, for the certain upstate, or for international students, our payment is different.
It is, but international students are not in that 14, I can just, it is not in the 14.
So then you have to pay at the beginning.
Right. Right. There are some requirements about how international students are given permission to take classes and demonstrate, like, the financial ability to pay. So for right now, I know that they are not, but that does not mean moving forward, we have to.
Is it an announcement or is it a discussion?
Huh?
Is it an announcement today or is it a discussion?
It's an announcement. This is happening. Yeah.
And it will start from the spring.
And it will start with registration that begins on November 17th. So 7 days after that, there will be some students who are dropped if they have not paid.
So if this does not belong to the 14 group, but that's like, let me say, for example, if you want to be in that group, to consider, then what should we do?
That's a great question. And I would say we'll probably be entering discussion with the so Monica Liu oversees the international programs and services. We can have some discussion about that.
Yeah, and I think that really impact us in a way that's impact us a lot in a different way. Like we pay $7,000 per semester.
Right.
And now you are saying, I think from this semester we change, you have to pay after you register.
That's you have to pay or get into a payment plan, yes.
No, because the payment plan is a different thing. The payment plan, they charge the fee. So a lot of international students doesn't want to pay with the payment plan.
Right.
More. But it just doesn't make sense if you just announce and then say we're about to do this. So I really want to see if there's a way to talk about this one more. Because I don't think it's fair enough to us to have a very short moment and then just about to,
I'm sorry, and then I see the other hands.
So I had that same question, and then I had one, so which you've answered now. And then I had my other kind of sidebar question. Aside from the $10 to $12 million that is on the books, one of the other reasons for doing this was perhaps to drop ghost students or students. And do we have any idea of the potential impact of that? As far as
no, but they would be able to assess it as not right now.
So maybe it. Next spring, we'll hear, like, how did it go? Okay.
Yeah, because we know that we'll study this quite a bit, and we'll be all kinds of, we didn't think of this, unintended impact, and a number of things, so you know. And our goal, we're even, you know, although a lot of testing has been happening, of course, the concern is when it's time, go time, is it all going to work properly, and will a student in the 14 accidentally get dropped? Probably, like, lots of different things that we're going to have to monitor very closely. We did look at our area institutions and see what their drop or non-payment policies were, their time frames, and sort of modeled this very closely after the various system of the area officials as well. I don't know if I saw Noah's hand, JR, and Jay.
You saw everybody.
Yes. Did I see yours? No. I'll start with Jay. We'll just come down the line. This
I have two real quick questions. What's the, how are students notified that this is happening, and what's the lead time on that? And then the other thing is, what are we setting up to help students when they, because it goes 7-5 and it goes to 1.
7-3.
So, 7-3 and 1. And so the time is already fairly short for the first one, but it gets even shorter. So what are we doing here in case someone falls into that thing so that something can quickly happen to help them versus they're coming to us after their classes were dropped? So.
Yes. Yeah, so the communication plan has it starting about a month out. So you'll start to see messaging as early as the beginning of next week. Scaffolded communication, so it'll be physical posters with QR codes that help get people to information pages about payment plan, about the schedule of drops, like that they can get to text messages. We talked about Canvas campaigns as well, and trying to leverage probably time frames right before critical drop dates as additional reminders, emails. So many forms of communication about this that not only just the students, the people in the community, so that they're aware of it. We've been talking to members of the community, but of course this is challenging because we haven't done it in a dozen years, right? So it's just going to be literally growing pains in terms of getting acclimated to redoing it. And then points of contact in our tuition and fees office. And it's usually typically our admissions and records area that also say help students, like when they go through that verification process, like confirming their identity that had been dropped from classes and getting assistance and getting back into classes. So similar kind of process.
So are we going to see those notices like when the student's actually enrolling and they reach the end and, you know, there's something that says, you know, here's your cost and, oh, by the way, you could have X number of days. Make sure you, I mean, are we...
Yeah, they will tighten up the payment reminders. And to, just to be clear, and I know I've heard this at board meetings, should remind students that they owe us money. We absolutely do. All the time. And I get it. Like, there are many reasons why people can't pay at the time that they register. And then so we will continue to have those multiple kinds of reminders.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions, actually. How many students would this be, like, affecting? Because I already know, at least 6 students who are not able to come back to CCSF because they aren't able to, like, pay these fees.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a different side of things, also, even trying to, like, pay, like, for, so you wouldn't get dropped, sometimes the thing does not let you pay.
Mm-hmm.
I have had that happen.
Yeah. So, 2 things. One, I think you've heard in different venues that the college is considering how they will use the remaining COVID funding, and it has been mentioned as one option is to help repay outstanding debt. So we've done that kind of thing a couple of times here at the college. Probably the one that people remember most is the Free City one, because it was $2.1 million. Prior to that, there was another effort with some, I want to say it might have been HERF funding or something along that line, that we offered an opportunity for students to come back if they were interested in registering, and we would pay back former debt. So that's on the table as a possibility to help some students who may have some outstanding. And then obviously we mentioned the smaller set of fees would not drop a student, right? If it was just the health fee and the other 2 student related fees, that it would not drop the students for that. It would only drop it if it went above that $39 threshold. So just to be aware of that. Not 100% sure how many students it will affect, but like I said, when we asked our tuition and fees area, they mentioned 5,000 students who had the $39 fee only hanging out there, but it was approximately 4,000 students who had more than that. So that's just a number that I'm putting out there. It certainly could be more. I just don't know at this point. And again, we're really pushing students looking into other sort of financial needs to try to help support their ability to pay, whether it's scholarships, financial aid, or again, utilizing the payment plan. But I appreciate the question. So I'm going to go back and ask more questions about how we're doing things. So
I do know that a club that I'm in is doing might be doing a fundraiser to use.
And then we also know that a lot of colleges, their foundations oftentimes will raise money for emergency funds and things like that. So that's another strategy of encouraging that. They should think about what some of their multiple priorities may be. Councilmember Brandt, that you have.
I do have things, but I feel like there are people that have waited a little bit longer, so I'm just going to go to them first.
I strongly oppose this action by City College of San Francisco. Even when we're trying to figure out how many students, it will affect one student is too many in my vision. There's so many things already that students are juggling on an everyday basis. Including food insecurity, housing, transportation. Having this obstacle and barrier imposed or represented from 12, 13 years ago, it's just detrimental. And the harder part is that this isn't even a discussion. This is an action that's already taking place. So not even having a sort of process to have these discussions. I'm still gathering my thoughts. I've been gathering my thoughts. I strongly oppose this, and that's where I stand, and my comments are reflected on that.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I'm trying to understand process and procedure here. Like, how was this determined? By whom was it determined? Why was this not a collective decision, or was it a collective decision? I would think with something like this, this is exactly what Associated Students is for, and what students serve in representation for, you know, on behalf of our constituents. So just wondering how that came about.
Yeah, it is required for the college to collect the fees.
Okay, so we've been out of compliance.
Okay, for 12 to 13 years.
Let's start there.
Okay.
That's something that I was not aware of. Why were we not doing this in all that time?
I don't know what the decision was.
Got it. And is there a better or different way to do this? What do other educational institutions do?
We did model this after what other institutions do when they essentially have a period of time of when they require it. And so it is essentially what most institutions do. Now, they also may have other programs in place, you know, in terms of supporting student payments. I'm not sure about that. Like I mentioned, how some colleges and the foundation may have emergency funding. We actually do apparently have an emergency grant program for students through our Office of Financial Aid. That may be something else that we're, you know, in addition to pushing students towards financial aid and applying, also making students aware of what the emergency funds are there to cover. This would be sort of in alignment with what other.
So I really appreciate the entirety of what you presented this, right? Even with the unknowns, it sounds like there's more that we need to know. Mm-hmm. I think too, just reading this agenda item, like for some agenda items, there's a description and for some there's not. So I feel like to a certain extent, like in looking at our own agendas and looking at this agenda, I don't know that it's necessarily clear to the public what, I mean, the topic, yes, but not exactly what's going to happen. And I get that parts of this are still up in the air, and maybe that's why. But maybe if we could just afford more clarity if we bring this back, so that if students or anyone want to talk about it, they can and understand what has been happening. I hear that we're doing this because we're out of compliance and because of the number of ghost students. And I'm just wondering if the benefits outweigh the risks, because I see this as a way of creating additional instability for the college when we potentially lose students and not knowing how many students we're talking about losing. And I think we have to think about all those factors. And I don't know how we get that data or information without doing this, but I'm deeply concerned, you know, on the student side and from the student perspective. Thank you.
Yes, Councilor Baton. The same, this one come from the registration department, Monica Liu. So we'll be able to invite her next.
It doesn't come from her. The college has decided that they have to be in compliance.
The college.
Yes.
Who has mentioned.
I'm sorry.
When you say the college, so who?
It's what's named.
Collectively, the college, right?
So we'll be able to have someone who on that group to come here, and then we can ask something. Why is not possible?
I'm in the group. Which is why I'm bringing that. But I can bring other folks who represent some of the different areas.
If I can help out here, I think the question that you're asking is who else is a part of that group?
Oh, yeah. So I mentioned collaborating with colleagues from different areas. So we have, say, fiscal representation, because the bursar's office obviously is going to be impacted. That's where payments get made. So
BC Leo, so Jose Chesmore. I want to name all the right people because I'm going to forget. So there's so many different meetings and I've seen faces on the Zoom screen. But of course, Monica has been there. Chandra Edelman, because she oversees our tuition fees. Sheila, Raj, who also does technical work in the IT area. So it's a large group of people, probably more people who really want so been invited than want to be there, but
So because the reason I'm asking, I think, because we have been practiced the way we are doing right now, the way we make a payment right now for a very long time. In a very short amount of time, like in 2 months, instead of 3, and now we just make an announcement. I mean, you know, when you are about to announce something, it would take at least, like you give people time to mentally repair, especially if you're talking about finance. And I'm just saying, like, when by the moment we announce this, already have people already trigger. A lot of people already feel like it immediately impacts to them because they know how important this announcement can be impacting them, like, for the next semester. And I'm working at the registration, and I see a lot of them who oftentimes and couldn't be able to make a payment. And though I'm the one who not qualified for financial aid, not qualified for anything at all. Mm-hmm. And they are the group we are targeting right now, and they are the group who need help the most to come back to college. And just because we are required them to make a payment at the very beginning, for them, there's no way for them to set to going back to college. Just because this announcement, this decision, that's the one we're saying we're making it, and then we'll start to impact the next semester. So that's the number one thing. And then I'm asking, because at the beginning I would say, I'm international student, my payment every semester is 8,000, period. 8,000 is a very different story. So we have 30 students who cannot pay $39, and you have someone like me who couldn't barely afford to find on the scholarship and on the work 15 hours on campus and all my serving put in together to pay $8,000. And then I make that serving until the end, so it will be barely enough for me to make a payment. And now we are saying we pay that at the very beginning. And you're saying we are not even in that room to be considered. So it's really like confuse me in a way. We at the group have the most impact, and we're not even in that to be considered for this decision. And I thought we are here at a certain voice to make a certain voices, to weigh impact, or to say how it can be a better learning experience for a student. And right now, this one doesn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. It makes us feel like you buy a product, you come to shop, you pay at the door, then you can get out. But that should not be the purpose of education. It should be the time when you come and you give a chance to learn and to grow. And then, you know, of course, that's our responsibility to make a payment. And like for us, for example, I can say for my example, I make the payment every semester. That's why I can move on to the next semester, right? So we are the one who, even though we struggle, but we still make the payment to move on for the next one. But now with this decision, this announcement, it will stop us right at the door. And it will, like for me today, if I'm not in this committee, there's no way for me to know this news and think about by November, I received this information. This information, it will be a shock because I need to refinance all the things that happened in my life to a point how I can, like, what should I do? How I can align my payment to align with the school policy. And you know, like, if someone will not be able to refinance their own situation, then that means by that semester, the door is closed to them already. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, with all the respect, I know the school have their own policy and the different thing that's about collect the fee. But really, if you can consider for us, like, I mean, I don't know how it can happen, but I can just talk for my fellow, the one who are international student, because this policy really, really important to be honest. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
All right, I've taken all the time from the next person and gone over, so I will entertain a motion to continue discussion.
Okay. So,
and how much time?
Third.
Ten minutes.
Mary's
10 minutes. Okay, thank you. And so there has been a motion and a second to extend the time by 10 minutes. Any opposition to that? All right, so we are extending time by 10 minutes on this topic, and I see Councilmember Bravewoman online.
Thank you. So, and I might have missed it because some of the audio, it cuts out. So I haven't heard all of the comments that are in the room. But when I was meeting with Chancellor Bailey last year, and we were first discussing ways to help combat ghost students, and one of the things that was proposed was dropping for non-payment. I had real concerns when this was first brought to me, but part of the discussion and the assurances that were told to me and our executive director at the time was that it wouldn't be an automatic drop. They would even reaching out to a student and making arrangements for payment would be enough to hold off the drop for non-payment. Part of the idea was that it was supposed to be a way to check that someone was a human being and not a bot. And so I'm not sure how much of that got discussed today, but I do want to raise that as like, that was supposed to be the intent of how, right, the purpose of using this tool. It's been actually it's part of the protocols that have been in place all along, but haven't been implemented. At least this is the information that we were getting from Interim Chancellor Bailey at the time. So, and I just want to make sure, and I apologize that, for not being there in person today and being more fully part of the discussion, right. But that this isn't, we're not talking about something vastly different than what was outlined to us a year ago.
Right. And it may be somewhat different, Mary, but we did talk about really promoting the payment plan piece to try to avoid dropping students who may not fit into some of the special categories, may not be free city, but it still may sound like there is more enforcement than it may have sounded. I do want to be clear on that, and we will bring this back. I'm taking in all the discussion, and certainly we'll take this to cabinet, right, so that they can hear about it as well.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, Councilmember Villalobos.
Once again, this is devastating and alarming. And my question is, of all the folks that you were mentioning, that were in the room, and the reason I would want to know is accountability. I want to know who's making these decisions on behalf of students. My question, and just clearly putting it on the table, for any students part of this body where this discussion was taking place that affects students?
Likely not, no.
Is that because it was a legal issue? Things were not following a legal thing?
Well, I mean, it was a discussion that I know happened at least cabinet level, and a recognition that we haven't been.
I'm sorry to jump in. For international student, are they allowed to make a payment plan?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, are you done?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think asking for who was a part of it and what the name of that committee or body is, I think this is where we start to run into problems. Like, in my opinion, the entire purpose of participatory governance committee and council is to collectively make decisions and to have transparency. And it just doesn't feel like that's what's happening here or what happened here. And so I would love to know the name of that body or that group. I don't understand why there's not a student serving on that, especially when this is something that impacts students directly. I would consider this as a student part of our 9+1 rights. I would think it's part of the +1.
any other district and college policy procedure or related matter that the district governing board determines will have significant effect on students. And so I'm really not understanding our process and procedure here. Like, what do we have all of these committees for if not to make these decisions transparently and collectively within the structure that exists? And I guess another question I have is, if we've been out of compliance for as long as we have, why is there now an urgency to be compliant at this point in time? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that because we've been doing something wrong for so long, we should continue to do something wrong, but I'm just trying to understand the why right now.
Yeah, I think two things. One, I think it was thought that this was more of a operational, like, how do we get back into compliance with our requirement to collect fees? But two, I think the impact of those students at one point was so devastating that they were looking at multiple things. This came up as a potential strategy. So it's that challenge with those students. And admittedly, it's much better now with a number of the other strategies that have been put into place, but it created a sense of urgency to put the operational pieces back into place to re-comply with being out of compliance.
Since Kristen's here, can I ask, Kristen, does this have anything to do with accreditation standards of how we collect or have any? Mm-hmm. So it's not anything to do with accreditation. Mm-hmm. It's a state thing.
Definitely.
Office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know you had a...
Oh, sorry. I didn't have another. Over here.
I just had a process question about how it's implemented too. Is what students are on a payment plan if they miss a payment, let's say, is the...
I think as long as they're in a payment plan, they are not hitting the initial draft, we don't just keep them in there.
We'd like to know the 14 groups.
Of course. Yeah.
That's important for us to know that.
Yeah. Sure. And this will come back to this group again.
Yeah, aside from the 14 groups and the Free City students, I would love to have a sense of what are we talking about in terms of numbers. It's like, I know we can't get an exact number, but can we narrow down at least?
Because like, we don't have any students will register. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's always going to be in real time who is registered. That's...
Yeah, just the, I know we're asking about the 14 groups and it's, you know, and I'm all for it, but just putting a number of affecting 4,000 students, just one student alone is too many.
Mm-hmm.
4,000, I can't even imagine, just like I said, holistically.
And people are using the word the number 4,000 because currently when we asked our tuition and fees area how many people had outstanding fees still, there are 5,000 students who have the $39 of required health and say student fees, and we know that students who owe the $39 only will not be dropped. So they paid all the, like say they have Free City and Free City paid all the tuition, it doesn't cover fees, it won't pay that $39. Those students will not be dropped. But there could be students who have the 39 plus, say they signed up for a class and had materials fees and now they owe an additional amount. So anything above that 39 is potentially a group of students that may be dropped. And right now, let me ask that question, tuition fees, they said approximately 4,000 students had more than the $39 owed.
And my last thought and statement, it's more of an ask. And it goes hand with Councilmember Braverman's statement. To all the other constituency groups that are present at this PGC and that are not part of this body that decided to go ahead with this drop students for non-payment. I'm curious to see where your constituency groups stand, because. And the reason I'm asking, because time and time again, we hear reports on how we're advocating for students, or how we're committed to students. I want to see where the commitment is, because this is by far the number one thing for students as a priority, making sure that they're in that seat, especially when we have food insecurity, housing insecurity, transportation insecurity that we already are battling on an everyday basis and having this potential, not even potential, it's not even a discussion, it's an action that the school is already willing to take or will take. It's just devastating.
Sorry, I think part of the problem here is the framing of it. I think from what I'm hearing, at least, the institution is viewing this as something that will be beneficial to students in a different way, in the sense of clearing up spaces and classes that are being taken up by ghost students. And I realize that that's a very real problem, but at what cost, right? Like, we got to look at the whole picture. And if we don't have a sense of how many people it's going to impact, like, I don't know if we're putting ourselves in a worse situation than the one we already find ourselves in. So, like, I don't know. We have to responsibly make decisions. How do you responsibly make a decision when you don't know what the outcome or impact is?
And I don't know what the consequences of continuing to not feel like that these are. And that's a question I can ask too.
Yeah, all of it. Folks.
Yeah. No, I appreciate all of
it. Yeah, thank you.
And can you also ask for public comment for those of you that most those folks that we're here for public comment on this item to give them an opportunity.
We were, yeah. Always the fully record. All right, I see a hand online, Council Member Brady.
Thank you. Yes, I just want to respond to Council Member Malinalli Villalobos. We did push back in our conversations with, again, Interim Chancellor Bailey and again, the assurances we were given at the time was that everyone would be given ample opportunity, but to Councilmember Brandt's point, and this is how it was being pitched to us as AFT, that this would help address and free up seats for students who were being blocked by ghost students. And, you know, last year at this time, we were turning away way too many students because of ghost students.
All right, any additional council members have comments before we open this up to public for comments? I'm not seeing any hands, so I'm gonna
sorry, was that for public
comment? Yeah, I'm about to open the floor for public comment. So if there is any public comment on this item. Did you want to take this?
If the other student wants to go first.
You can go ahead. I would like to do it first.
Okay. So I'm just really concerned about the drop for non-payment as a student that, and I always use my own experiences because like that's what I can speak to the most. I'm a student that often sometimes has fees that I don't pay at the front end of the semester because I am primarily a student worker and I don't have an income source outside of my student employment. And I'm not unable to pay between at the start of a semester or let's say in November, December at the end of a semester. And I pay throughout the semester bit by bit because there are other fees, things I need to pay for, housing, my cell phone to even be able to go to work or find additional work outside of City College or food because, you know, I also have family members like a lot of our other students do that we have to take care of. So I'm just really concerned about what this will mean for the students that, again, don't have the financial means to pay upfront. And also, I think I've brought this up in front of Dr. Cooper Wilkins before, or you heard this at the exec council last week. There is concern expressed around the payment plan, like the dates and deadlines you have to meet to even enroll in the payment plan and have it not just be one singular payment, but multiple payments, they're not clear. So I'm really concerned about the outreach about that because I'm just going to be honest, this college does not do a good job at letting students know about details. And this is something that I really hope our other student leaders, our student community members continue to push against because I also see the benefits of getting ghost students out, but at what cost to your real students that are, again, poverty stricken or don't have access to things like financial aid and they're balancing other life expenses. Period.
Yeah. Oh, I would like to echo what the other student said. Also, hi, I'm a student here. One thing, like in my particular scenario as well, like I've risked a lot to put myself back into school, like a lot of opportunity costs that I have taken on. And for like even like 3 weeks into the semester, for me to get dropped because I didn't pay a $39 fee, or like right now I owe $300 to the school that I plan on paying by the end of the semester, with the knowledge that like if I pay it off by the end of the semester, then I'll be able to enroll next semester. It's usually how these things work at all the other institutions I studied at. So to hear that like I'm potentially at risk of being dropped at this point of the semester, it was like very frightening to me. So I immediately walked over to this room to talk to you guys about this. Another thing that is like questionable for me is this concept of ghost students as the major driver behind this policy, because in my experience, maybe there's data that I don't know about that ghost students are a problem, but in my experience, ghost students, like quote unquote ghost students, which I'm assuming are people who are enrolled in a class but don't go to the class, those tend to be dropped by the professors at the individual class level within the first 3 weeks. That's how a lot of classes have been okay to me in my experience. Like a calculus class, for example, this was the case where seats opened up for me because students didn't show up in the first 2 weeks. I don't know what the time period is for the fee drop deadline that we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. If that's like later in the semester, I can't imagine that there would still be ghost students. Like I said, there may be data that I'm not aware of about this ghost student concept, but I really question that as like a reason to drive this policy forward. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank God I am not in the situation of needing a plan payment, but I know very many other students who are. If I was in that situation, I would probably be having an anxiety attack right now for all the reasons that they mentioned right now, the other comment. It doesn't make sense that ghost students would be the driving for this, because as was mentioned, ghost students are gotten rid of way earlier in the semester. If we are implementing this now, this is kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's very much like losing the plot. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense, because the impact that was present at the beginning for these fees to be assuaged is still here. It's still here, and it's even greater now than it was then. So it really doesn't make any sense to bring this down now. There just has to be another solution. It doesn't make sense, and there must be another way.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Evangela. I am a older student, let's just say that, and you definitely get the understanding when I say older student. I just recently came back to City College of San Francisco. I love this school. I'm a Ram for life. I will tell you this though. Back then, there was me with, of course, financial aid, but sometimes it's not coming as quick. It's not coming into the middle of the semester. And right now I'm having a situation where it went to the wrong address, right? And that takes another 3 to 5 weeks. So by the time I get to receive the funds, the semester will probably be close to being over. When back then, and even now, I'm definitely nervous about extra fees, but me wanting to be in school, me wanting to make sure that I'm taking these classes, it's understood that I have to do my job and my part just like our professors and everybody else. I think that the thing that you were saying, I feel like it's time for, if you believe in the students as a collective, why not pay 50% of that and then tell them, let's do a payment plan or something like that, or pay the 100% and maybe they can do volunteer. Something has to give, because it's a real serious deficit. And I think you said 4,000 students. I just heard that number, so I might be wrong on the number, but as you pay attention to students and you pay attention to their needs, you understand that there is not one way for everybody. I'm sure that y'all know that there's like a big heavy concept as far as food insecurities. Yet people are still trying to figure out how to pay for the cafeteria. There is programs that has snacks, but there are students still going hungry every single day. And I do mean every single day, even today. And I'm not going to put my friend's business out there, but I'm grateful to SparkPoint for having the Cal Fresh situation come for these last 2 days. Not a lot of students knew about it, though. Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of students feel comfortable doing it because they don't want to hear the no. And they're starting. Like, it's not a concept beyond all of us as students that this is what's going on. So if they can't even pay for food, they can't even pay for housing, we can't even pay for these things that everybody understands we need every single day, even to get to something. I hope that y'all understand it should not be left upon y'all that we could pay for our fees. And it's not that we don't want to come to school. It's not that we don't want to pay for the fees. We don't have the funds to do so. So my point about the volunteering or something of that sort, to will work to pay the fees off, is that something that we can do? And that's, you know, that's just a concept of something that might be able to help us in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you.
And on this, we're going to close this item but bring it back next week, and I'll take under advisement all the things that have been said and take those back and share those with them.
If I can come back at 7 seconds.
So thank you. We are going to move on to our standing committee reports. ABC Charles, thank you for hanging in there with us, and you are up next.
Thank you. Submitted a written report. I wanted to draw your attention to the fact that we have adopted our objectives for 2025-26. So you can see items 1, 2, and 3 there, focusing really on raising awareness of the new 2024 standards that ACC and put into working order, if you will. Also to note that we are really taking regular and substantive interaction very seriously, otherwise known as RSI, for distance education classes, and we'll do whatever we can to promote faculty engagement in RSI in their distance ed classes. So we actually already had a presentation on that at our most recent, which was our first meeting of the semester. And there's some great work going on, and it was a great discussion about some concerns, but really trying to figure out how we can support RSI taking place in those distance ed classes. It's really so critical for students. And because of that, it is, in fact, required by the federal government that we actually demonstrate this in 100% of our classes. ACCJC also monitors that as part of the accreditation process. When they're doing that monitoring, they're looking for 85% of an 85% threshold, but it's really very, very critical because it really improves student success rates to have that kind of engagement. So it's something we'll be talking about, and there'll be various presentations about it. But those are really the major updates. I will be reaching out to our PGC standing committees, as well as to our collegial governance committees, to just let them know about some mapping work that we have done with regard to mapping the 2024 standards to the areas of responsibility. The PGC standing committees have all really done that work already, because we've all been working on updating our committee descriptions, which we'll be bringing to PGC later this semester. And so that shouldn't be a surprise. They've already had to become familiar with those standards and how those standards relate to the work that they're doing. And again, the committee will, you know, stand ready to support folks in making sure that they're thinking about those standards and keeping track of evidence related to those standards. It's so much easier to do our self-evaluation with standards, and very sort of explicitly so. That's my update.
Thank you so much. Are there questions from council members? ABC Charles report. Are there any questions from members of the public, either in person or online? I am not seeing any hands raised. So I will thank you so much for coming and sharing an update.
Thank you.
I appreciate all your great work and
accreditation and your team of folks that you work with. So thank you. All right, it is time now for our facilities committee updates. And I know that ADC Vasquez is with us online.
Great. Thank you this afternoon for having me on the PGC meeting. I first just want to follow up. I heard the comments earlier at the beginning of the meeting. I will be following up directly tomorrow, you know, looking into the information, following up with Orkin and get better information. I did ask them when the incident occurred last week, you know, their process, and that's what they explained to me, which is why the notification went out. But I will be doing some additional checking tomorrow morning. So hopefully I'll be able to reply back with a report early next week after I do some more due diligence on my end. So thank you for all the follow-up information regarding that process, but I will be following up independently as well. But I wanted to touch base on some of the stuff from the Facilities Committee meeting, one of them being the, one of the items being the Bubble Reservoir project. We're continuing to work with them and get information. They are currently looking to start in early November. Next week, we'll get a more specific date so we can notify the college community of their dates of proposed work. And so still a work in progress. They originally said early October, but they didn't have their contracts in place. So that's still a work in progress, but we're hoping to have that information available early next week, sometime next week with a community notice. We're also continuing to go through some hiring processes. The Director of Buildings and Grounds will continue, be starting up again. We are looking at hiring two utility workers, gardeners, and stationary engineers, and going to be outreaching for custodians, plumbers, and custodial supervisors. So still, that's a process that's moving along. Some information regarding some of our heating projects. The Creative Arts Extension project has been underway. We're working with that team. We had a little bit of a smell issue with some of the work. We've kind of remedied that, and they're still scheduled to be done by the end of December. The Smith-Statler building, that's got a little bit of a harder start. We're trying to make sure we get all of the water system set up for the culinary program so we don't stop interruption there of their services and program. Rosenberg Library, that one is moving along well. The heating portion is up and running, which is great, ready for the winter. And the cooling portion is close to wrapping up and hopefully will be continued to be tested and completed in November. So that was kind of a process there. I'll skip down to the Diego Rivera Theater. The architect have completed their review with DSA, and they're making the final changes, and we're expecting the approval within the next 5 to 8 days. And that's a stamp for them. I think they don't have any additional questions. It's just all the stuff they commented on. We need to make the changes and then some and get that stamped. So we're expecting the stamp sometime next week. So that's great news for that project. Then the next steps regarding a contract for the contractor and then a groundbreaking event for that project. Let me just scroll down. I'll touch base on some roof projects. Cloud Hall, that roof project is complete. There's some punch list items they're still doing, but that noise should be down to very little on that project. The other roofs that we're working on at Belma Hall, which is also nearing, also complete, and just a final punch list there. Two projects that are ongoing. The library roof project is there. They've added some safety scaffolding and signage for redirecting for better pedestrian pathways has been updated and included. And we've also required the contractor to use the crane on Sunday when the college campus is less active. Mission Center roofing project is also underway, and they have a separate access on the outside in. We scheduled some of the crane setups on Fridays, and that notification has also been sent out. Go back up. Following up on other projects, the Evans Center renovation, we're working with the departments there. We're expecting approval from DSA. Again, we're possibly in November, and then we'll look to put that package out to bid, and that'll be in the construction. John Adams is also a project that's we're trying to get some momentum on as we're looking to relocate the allied health programs there. And then Science Hall, that one we've completed some preliminary design. Now we're working with some of the clarifications and questions some of the departments have with the way it's been presented. And we also got some preliminary information from DSA regarding some structural questions. Then that's kind of a summary. I know some of this information shows up in our facilities committee meeting. I missed the last one, and I apologize because I did not send my notes for review prior to the meeting as I was out of the country, but I will be there at the next meeting. Also, just we're going to be looking as a PGC requirement, reviewing our goals and also our language for the committee as well. So that'll be something on the next agenda as well. So with that, if there are any questions.
So are there any council member questions for ABC Vasquez, given their update? Yes, Council Member Snyder.
A couple of things. The Balboa Reservoir, are they going to be using our Kutakala Street to go through to get down there, or is it the plant, or...
They will be using the Frida Kahlo Street. I'm afraid we can't claim it as ours, but they will be using Frida Kahlo.
So maybe not, but our driveway that connects our parking lot. So how are we going to be dealing with the traffic issues then?
So that is something where initially they had a plan that they were going to be driving through the Lee Avenue, that alley by Whole Foods, down there. But until that's built, they won't have access to that. But again, the Lee Avenue that's behind our street and that North Avenue that borders the parking lot area and Reardon, that is a part of a street that's part of their improvement plan. So they will be using that as access into the back reservoir, just how we access it right now. We will have alternative access points, and we're working with them to make sure we have access to our parking area. So there will be a disruption, but we will have, as part of our plan with them, is making sure we continue to have access to our parking areas. And we're working with the city to make sure that that's part of their deal as well.
Okay. Second to that, you may not be the right person. Let me have to ask the board, but I'm wondering about our agreements with lower income housing there, whether the college is going to get any kind of perk with possibly, employees or students that want lower income housing. Is that going to be offered still here, or because that originally was part of the deal?
Yeah, so there is my understanding is the first two buildings that are being built by the developer, which is Bridge Housing, they're going to focus on the tax credits, which is a federal process, a federal subsidies for the process for both buildings. They have an educator or CCSF, in a housing plan that won't be subsidized by any program. But it may be the last item built by the developer as they got to generate their resources and funds to build it. But that is something that the Bridge Housing is doing independent of any other subsidies. But that's not in their first phase of construction. That I'm aware of. And it'll be a multi-year plan for them, but I know for the first 2 years, they're going to focus on the affordable housing plans.
Great. My other question is, I've noticed going through buildings that we have a lot of empty spaces now in Cloud and in the area building. And it's almost concerning because of safety. It's dark in certain areas. And I'm just wondering, what is the plan for a lot of these areas now that are vacant, like the veterans and... is there a plan? Over at MUB today, I went in there and it's a graveyard going through it. It can be more dangerous when students are, especially when the lighting is the best over there and so forth. So what is the actual ultimate plan?
So there are some plans that they're not finalized or approved or turned over to me, but I know the logic of the HBB is that they're going to convert a lot of those office areas that were temporarily converted, they're going to go back to classrooms. I think there's going to be, out of the office spaces that are there, I think 10 are going to be converted back to classrooms. which is what they were before. I wasn't here, so I don't know all the details other than we're looking to convert those back, and some of the other spaces will remain office areas, and some programs will be moving in there as well. And similar, and similar to cloud in other spaces that have been vacated, I'm working on having that list available, and through the chancellor and VCs understand who's going to be moving into those areas for future planning as well.
And my final, more of a comment, but and also thank you, but and a concern with all these cranes, with all these work areas happening during student classes and so forth. You know, I've complained before, but not having proper signage, not having proper notification, and I see that there's been a little bit of more signage. It could be better, but we also need to be reminded that we need to take down the signage once these things are going. You know, coming to work on Saturday, I was thankful that, you know, I was given the information that the student health area would be, you know, having detours and so forth during the flex day and that weekend. But coming back and having the signage still out there and students asking me, am I allowed to go in through here? Because you still have the signage saying detour or not, this area is being, you know, that doesn't really help matters. So you need, for safety reasons, we need to have signage up, but we also need to have it down.
Yeah, I agree.
Responsibility of the facility's responsibility. I shouldn't have to go out there removing signs and stuff. It doesn't look good.
And that is correct. And I got your message and I followed up with the project manager, and the contractor took down their sign, but it was that A-frame with that information. So we'll continue to get that signage updated and improved, and also work on the removal in a timely manner as well.
I see that council member Bravewoman is staring
up. Thank you. Thank you for these updates, Alberto. My question is, and maybe you aren't the right person to ask, but I get to campus really early in the mornings, and I've been parking in the lot next to the STEAM Center, which is closest to Reardon. And I have noticed a lot of the spaces being taken up in the morning by Reardon students. They're purchasing the ticket, but I thought there was some discussion before the construction began on the STEAM building that we were going to mitigate the number of high school students parking in the lots. Because what I'm getting are students, and my first class starts at 9 in the morning, my students saying they couldn't find any parking, they were late for exams because there wasn't parking, et cetera, et cetera. And between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, I'm seeing that lot primarily filled with Reardon students. Just my observation coming through.
And that is fair. I know Mario's reached out to both of the high schools, you know, on opposite ends of the campus, right? We have Lick on the ocean side, and then we have the Reardon on, you know, almost diagonally on the other side near the Student Health Center, across from Student Health Center location. He's reached out to their administration, you know, telling them that we're not going to allow students to park here anymore. And obviously it's met with a lot of, you know, angst by them, because it's been a space for them in the past. And we've had plenty of parking available for everybody. And so Chief is going to continue to work on that. I don't know his plan for enforcing yet, but I know it's something he's been working with the administration of both high schools regarding parking access and limitations for that as well. So But I will bring it up to him to see what his plan is, or what it, if there's been any next steps for that as well. I just don't know, but I know he did work, reach out to them to let them know that, you know, we're not going to be able to support their parking for their students.
I appreciate that. One suggestion I had, and I don't know how feasible this is, but with our new faculty IDs, we need an ID to be able to, you know, to unlock the doors. We need an ID to use the copy machines. Perhaps there's a way to add that feature to girls, please. Sorry, I have grandkids. That we somehow incorporate student IDs or student ID numbers with purchasing the tickets, so it's restricted to who can purchase the tickets. That's
all. Yeah, I think that's a fair suggestion. I don't know all the technicalities of the back of the car technology for students versus faculty and staff? Because I you described what I got to go through. I have the same type of card. I don't know if the students have something similar or not. So that's, we'll have to follow up with that. But I know the chief has started to send that information regarding enforcement.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for ABC Vasquez about their report? Any public comment on this item? Yes.
Hi, again, my name is Evangela, student here. My public comment, as far as facilities go, there is a few different things about the school that is happening. Where there is programs that have been moved over but have not been inside their facility. I wanted to know if there was a way that facilities could help students go and see kind of what the space looks like. One of them being, over here, it's not MUB anymore. I think HBD. It's HBD, right?
Brett Building.
Thank you. Brett Building. The whole first floor is like really dimly lit, but there is supposed to be... some retention programs moving over there. And I think that the students would love to see what it's looking like before the actual move happens, if it's going to happen or not. And then also in this building, I think it's the ARC, that there's supposed to be a space and no one has been in there. Wanted to know, do we ask facilities to kind of have that tour, or how do we go about that? And I know it's because facilities is talking about their thing. That's kind of why I wanted to incorporate that question.
I think we can arrange for tours of the identified confirmed spaces, say for like, I'll say the emulsion program or some mm-hmm. of the other multicultural retention programs. I think because we're still discussing AARC, that is a work in progress, right? And then as soon as we have definitive sort of answers about locations on that, we would certainly be able to do the same. I'm going to thanks to our dean, Noah Leistrup, who oversees the multicultural retention programs. And then Dean King just left. He would be the person for AARC, but we said we can arrange that.
Thank you.
Sorry, yes. I know you're going to, did you want to speak first?
I can respond to that. We're really excited for our retention programs to move into HVB. So right now the plan is for the first floor to move first, and then the second floor, or it's the mezzanine, is going to move at the end of the semester. So right now the facilities team is working on clearing out the space of the old furniture and really making it nice. They're going to do a deep clean of carpets and paint the walls and everything like that. So we're looking at the timeline of moving for the first floor. This space is going to be ready to move into the week of November 17th. So we can definitely follow up. I'll work with Dean King because that's probably the soonest we could do any sort of tour, because right now it's kind of jumbled in there with all the furniture is moved around and stuff like that. Because Dean King and I were talking, we definitely want student voice and input in terms of what the space looks and feels like once we move there. So that's for sure on our radar in terms of getting some opportunity to.
So the short answer is yes, we can arrange a tour. And then
it's just a matter of when.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, thank you for what you brought up. In terms of if a decision has not been finalized with regard to the African American Resource Center or AARC, and I know discussions are due to happen in November, from what I had been hearing about a focus group or to be able to talk about that.
A forum.
Thank you. Sorry, I keep calling it the wrong thing.
That's okay.
I think what is being asked for about being able to look at the spaces to understand what they're deciding upon makes a lot of sense. So yeah, if we can somehow make that happen so that as students are making decisions, they're understanding what they're making decisions on, like what are they getting or what are they losing by making the choices that they're making.
Yeah. So we can
to
kind of put those things timeline wise together.
And then, I'm so sorry. I had something else aside from this and I missed my opportunity earlier. Sorry, just since we have ABC Vasquez, I keep hearing from Muslim students who I find praying in random spaces on campus. Faculty members have told me sometimes in stairwells where it's like unsafe because people need to go to and from class, that there isn't really a space on campus for them to pray as there has been in the past. The prayer space was located on the lower level of the student union and the MLK Junior Center, but it became flooded. They got relocated to the bungalows, but then there was a flooding issue there and students were locked out. Students didn't really like that location anyway because it was in the middle of nowhere and too hard to get to class, especially if you have classes across the street. One of the things that has come up is, can the old family resource center in the upper level of the student union, which has carpet and cubbies and a sink, be utilized for the time being by students who need a prayer space, with the intention of a long-term solution being placement into the library where it is actually quieter.
I was going to ask if ABC can give an update on
where we're at. And I know I've already shared this, but
I mean, for me, it was just getting a final determination. If the library space can be available, we would try to get that set up quickly instead of moving things into one place or another. And so I'm hoping by the end of the month to have an answer to all that, so we can then make a final decision and move it one place or another. If we don't have a final decision, the family resources may be an option as well, an alternative option till the permanent space is found. But if we can confirm the permanent space sooner, then we would just want to do that.
I understand on confirming the permanent space as soon as possible, but nothing moves quickly here at City College of San Francisco. And so I think it's important to have an immediate or interim solution, no matter whatever length of time it's going to take to move through that other process. And I would not want us to rush through a process, you know, just because there is a need now. So I think it makes sense to try to accommodate with what exists and is not even being utilized, as you go through the procedures and steps to do what you need to do for the more permanent space.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Any other comments, questions, public or council?
Just wanted to agree, Heather, because if City College is inclusive and it's equitable, I definitely think that it needs to be shown that on every level. So absolutely, even if it's a 2-week space, I definitely think that students need that space to be able to pray. I just wanted to share my thoughts on that. Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, ABC Vasquez.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. We can get the agenda back up. I believe we are at the point in the agenda now where we will entertain future agenda items. You see that there are a couple of things listed as future agenda items that are scheduled. I want to say the cybersecurity presentation is due at our next meeting. You have a couple of other updates that are being scheduled out. But if there are additional future agenda items already not reflected here that you would like to share now, please do. You're always welcome to email them to our PGC. And we just ask for them at least a week in advance prior to the PGC agenda review meeting gathering so that we can incorporate those into the agenda and have a discussion on them. We'll bring back the drop for non-payment for sure next week. Anything else?
Yeah, sorry. I do have a question about the naming proposal, the Dr. Henry L. Augustine Jr. Center. I don't know what already has been proposed in my home, but I just, students have something they would like to put forth as well. And so I want to make sure that we're not looking at one without the other.
Yeah.
As we're
making, do we know which date it's suggested to come back here?
I think November 20th. It has to go to the next facilities, and then I had to schedule for ASExec.
Okay.
So it'll maybe I can definitely some people more goes to ASExec. So we
can. Yes, please. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Is there a proposal for adjournment?
So moved.
Second. Acclamation. We are adjourned at 5:34. Thank you, everyone.
Good job, everybody. I'm still end on time with all that discussion.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
All three broken.